I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmaid, and in another archive edition, we return to the cinema and experience a family falling apart in front of their son's eyes in 1960s suburbia. In a moment, we speak to actor turned writer and director Paul Dano about his film Wildlife.
Ed was the only kid we saw who really filled in the space between the lines. You could see his thoughts. So even if he wasn't saying a memorized line, he was still with the scene and he had a window sort of into his thoughts.
In 1960s Montana, Joe loses his job and struggles for purpose, eventually temporarily abandoning his family to help fight nearby forest fires. This drama follows how the mother and son cope and adapt to life without their husband and father. In the film, Dano has drawn together an impressive cast, with Carey Mulligan playing Jean Brisson, Jake Gyllenhaal playing Jerry Brisson, and Ed Oxenbould as their 14-year-old son, Joe.
I put my name on a list. I waited for my chance, and now they finally have a place for me.
You don't know anything about fires. You'll get burned up.
Well, I've been reading about them. I know enough.
You've been reading about them? You've been studying up?
Don't turn my words on me, Jean.
Dad, what's going on?
Your father is leaving us to go and fight those wildfires.
Written by Paul Dano with his partner Zoe Kazan, adapted from Richard Ford's novel of the same name. I spoke to the director around the time of the 2018 London Film Festival and started by asking why he wanted to bring this particular book and story to the screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like good writing. Like, you know, when somebody gives you that feeling, like it's kind of like for you, even though it's not, but it is, you know. A song might do that, right? Or a... So that's why you identify with a certain painter, because it's just like something is right for you. And I had a big experience reading this book, and the first sentence and paragraph remains one of my favorites ever.
What's the first sentence? Do you know it?
I do. The first sentence is, "In the fall of 1960, when I was 16 and my father was for a time not working, my mother met a man named Warren Miller and fell in love with him." It's fucking great. It's so good. And we were very tempted to start with that, but it felt important ultimately actually to make the experience present tense and sort of start in the idyllic almost Eden of being a kid, right, with the opening shot, and then sort of just slowly peel back the layers of a family image or portrait.
Was directing something that you decided you wanted to do way before this?
Yes. I've wanted to for a long time. You know, I started as an actor in the theater, which I thought sort of is what I was going to be. It was an actor, hopefully on Broadway. And when I was 16, I did my first film. It was called LIE. It sort of opened up. I just didn't know about independent film, and it just kind of opened up a world of film to me. So first was American cinema and independent cinema, and which led to then, of course, world cinema. And really around 19, 20, 21, I was just devouring film from all over the world. Oh, really? Bresson, Ozu, Melville, you know, just the big sort of guys of, you know, the Titans. And the medium sort of started to really like sing and go, started to want to hopefully make a film someday.
Interested to ask about the writing process with Zoe.
Well, yes. Yeah, so Zoe and I, we met doing a play. We've acted together. Zoe wrote a film called Ruby Sparks that we acted in. But this was my first time writing. And she's a proper writer. She's written some plays, some screenplays. I wrote a first draft, which was not in screenplay format, and she just kind of tore it apart. And we fought, and she basically, I think, felt it was easier to kind of show me rather than tell me. So she did a pass on it. And then we just traded it back and forth, which was a very natural way to work, and I think allowed us both to kind of put ourselves into it. So we'd talk about it for a few hours, and then one of us would take it, and maybe a couple months later we would come back to it. And because we optioned it ourselves, we didn't have anybody to answer to. So it was a very easy sort of let's let this thing grow while we do our other jobs. And, you know, a few years, we'll go make a film.
That's a nice way of doing it. When you wrote like this, did you find yourself naturally focusing more on the male characters, or did you deliberately reverse roles when you were writing Missouri?
Well, no. I think that we tried to just put ourselves through it again and again and cook it down and put it through a strainer. And yeah, there were times where towards the end when you're really kind of fine-tuning, you might look at Jeanette and Zoe might have done a pass, or I might have. Certainly figuring out the point of view is important. So I believe the entry point is at first the boy. Probably Zoe's first entry point was Jeanette in terms of how she relates to it on a personal level. My connection was more to the boy. But I see myself in all the characters. I see my parents, my grandparents, you know. So I think it was somewhat more organic than dividing it up strictly or something.
Well, how'd you like this particular getup?
Looks nice.
I used to dress like this all the time when I was younger. I'd stand behind the bull chutes of the rodeo and hope some cowboy would approve of me. Made my father very mad. They called us shoot beauties. Isn't that an impressive thing to know about your mother? That she was a shoot beauty?
Yeah, Dad told me about it. He said he liked it.
Yeah, it's probably nice to know your parents when one's not your parents.
It's interesting. I don't know if this is a faux pas or not, but we still, like, presume that there is such a thing as a perfect family and a perfect loving environment. And obviously the 60s setting is the archetype for that. But It's not true, though, is it? I don't think many people have families who don't argue, don't get stressed and strained. This is obviously a very extreme example.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like that's hopefully why the film can speak to people, right? I mean, it's about family, and most people can probably identify with one of the characters. And then a lot of people come from a home of either separation or divorce or economic struggle or whatever it is. And yeah, I sort of like that it's timeless. And I like, in fact, the idea that you're talking about, which is we still somehow try to put on the face of, you know, not necessarily perfection, but even I don't know, even you looking at Instagram these days, you know, like there's just something about presentation versus, and I also think it's beautiful, the fact that I don't know your life and you seem happy and nice, but who knows? Not that you're unhappy, but I don't know what your life has been, right? And that's fascinating, I think, that we exist in the world and have these, you know, we've all persevered through something.
I suppose, you know, boiling it down, cinema is honest. It's an honesty of sorts.
I think it can be, right? I mean, yeah, and certain films have given me that, right? They've given you a sense of companionship or something, or touched you in a way, or, you know, a book or a... I mean, certainly not all of it is, though.
No. So how did the various actors, not all of them, but how did the leads such as Kerry and Jake sort of come into the film? I'm tempted to say that you've got a little black book and you just phoned them up, but maybe it's more complicated than that.
I mean, I did call them. Kerry and Zoe did a play together about a decade ago, shared a dressing room, and are friends. I am also friends with Kerry, and I felt like she is a very... very good actor, and I thought seeing her get to be a bit more messy might be really exciting. She felt the same way, so that was good. And then Jake, I've worked with and I know, and him and Kerry are friends and had wanted to work together, and I knew that. So I started with Jeanette because she's sort of it's just so mysterious and complicated, and you know. And then Jake, sort of seeing him do something classically American. And we also talked about family for quite some time. And he really had a lot to bring and give to it. And I was very lucky to have both of them.
I have to next talk about Ed Oxenbould as Joe. And I know he's acted before, but he's just a revelation, really. And the film is on his shoulders. You know, we are experiencing the film through his eyes.
Well, our casting director in New York, Laura Rosenthal, we saw many kids. Then one day we got a tape from Australia, and this kid named Ed Oxenbold, which is a good name. And we watched his tape, and he was the kid. I mean, Ed was the only kid we saw who really filled in the space between the lines. Do you know what I mean? Like, the thought, you could see his thoughts. So even if he wasn't saying a memorized line, he was still with the scene in a really, he was an actor. I mean, he was working with the material. He wasn't just his natural self. And he had a window sort of into his thoughts. The film and the filmmaking really relies on, if we had not had Ed, you know, if I had to cut around a kid's performance, for example, the whole pace of the whole structure of the film is completely different, right? I mean, it really is reliant on his being a witness and letting the camera, you know, be on him.
With his character, it's interesting because, well, he goes through an incredible amount. He experiences and witnesses. But if it has touched him, we don't necessarily see that. We don't see, you're very held back in regards to the implications.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, the mystery of who our parents are just felt sort of intoxicating. It's a coming-of-age film for a family, for a mother, father, and son. He's sort of being, the kid being forced to be an adult suddenly, and the parents being the kids and acting out and sort of losing their way. And I don't know, just that thing of when you just start to see that your parents had a past life or that they struggle or, you know, they've been creating a safe world for you most of your life. And then one day you realize it's not everything isn't that. Yeah, sort of very sort of complicated, but archetypal, but hopefully personal, you know, and I just liked that mix.
Jeanette. I never liked that. Seemed like a waitress's name.
What would you rather be called?
Well, there used to be a singer named Lottie. La-di-da. How would that be?
I like Jeanette.
You've reminded me, actually, I was speaking to someone about the idea when they were younger that their parent sort of saw them as their best friend. And that goes back to the scene in the diner where Jeanette is speaking to Joe. And as if like he's the only one that can can be there for her.
It's nice. So I've spent so long working on this. It's nice right now that when things are sometimes reflected back, because I remember my first feeling, you know, in that scene, the mother asking, how do you feel about your name? Learning what age your mother is, you know, I sort of remember realizing my mom is a certain age, you know, and what does that mean? And a big part of it is they're kind of just not downloading onto him, but I don't know what they're confiding or they need something out of him suddenly, or she's also just kind of throwing him into adulthood. Like suddenly childhood is gone and it's like, you know,
I read that you sort of envisaged the end of the film. I don't want to spoil it, but I don't think it is necessarily spoiling it. I wanted to talk about this idea of a family photograph. But we were talking about families again, making back my own memories. And I great difficulty in those situations when I was younger, being photographed in a family environment. And it's quite a weird experience.
I mean, it sort of is the film for me. I think that it was the first thing it was the big thing I thought of that's not in the book, where I felt like, oh, this is my film. Like, this is what I have to say, what I, Paul, have to say through Wildlife, Richard Ford's book. Mm. I find it very powerful that there's these other photographs and we don't know those stories. Mm. And our neighbor's home, we don't know their story. We all have light and shadow, and that we all have love, hopefully, and that we probably all have some pain. And for me, I think there's something of a, in that moment for this kid, potentially almost a letting go or an acceptance almost. So it just, for me, it was the right place emotionally to live and to sort of not be reductive about what we've seen, but just to sort of present it and be honest about it.
What are you having a hard week? Is that it?
No, not very hard.
Or are we not getting along?
I think so.
I haven't talked too much so far, the journey of the mother and the father. I think what's very interesting, and we have touched upon it, is that they both make mistakes. We start off thinking that it's Jerry's completely in the wrong. I mean, that's what I felt when I was watching it. But then we soon learn that that's far from the case. It's much more complicated than that. I presume the trick is, or the thing to avoid when you were writing it and even directing it, was that idea of judgment, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I was not looking to condemn these parents, right? I feel like I understand their struggle, and I don't know, my heart went out to them immediately, even though they fuck up, you know, in a big way. I just think that's human, and I think that sort of the way that we tried to work was to really kind of, you know, fairly honest about the warts and allness of life rather than over-plot it or over-explain it. And again, that's part of the advantage of the kid's point of view, too, is kind of how we reveal information and and that we're, you know, some of our inner life is sometimes out of our control, or it's hard to.
I'm interested to ask, from the outside, I've obviously seen you, you know, acting and doing an awful lot of work. You come across, at least on that in that sense, a very confident person, but I presume this was quite a difficult journey for you. It was, making a film is not easy.
No. I mean, I can't tell you how many days I wanted to just destroy it, you know. Really? Yeah, sure. I mean, but it's also one of the best times I've ever had, and I can't wait to do it again. I mean, it's such it takes such an incredible amount of energy, and just to get to day one of production, honestly, it's such a big experience, and wildlife has been a big part of our life for a while now, and it's really wonderful at the same time. But yes, now I'm at the point where it was one of the best times I've ever had, but I can't, so many sleepless nights and pulling your hair out and, you know, whatever, because you want to get the thing inside your head and see it come to fruition, and a lot of obstacles along the way.
Well, how was the fire? Did you put it out?
Oh, we got most of it. Snow should take out the rest.
That's good.
Yeah, it was hell out there. Can't tell you. I had to stop a man from running in the fire. I had to drag him down.
It sounds dangerous.
It was, but I'm happy to be home.
Well, we're glad you came.
Thanks to Paul for speaking to me. Wildlife is a slow-moving film with powerful and rewarding performances from its three leads. It's really wonderful. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. It's here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and themed series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.